It's Window Nation's semi-annual sale, and it's a big deal. Right now, get 50% off all windows along with no interest for 5 years plus bonus savings when you schedule a consult today. If your windows leak, get foggy or hot, or you're paying high utility bills, that's a big deal. With Window Nation's semi-annual sale, you can replace your windows and save a big deal too. Schedule a no-obligation in-home estimate now. Call 866-90-NATION or visit windownation.com.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey guys, what's going on? Jeff Mosher here from the Inside the Birds podcast. Listen, I am covering the Eagles on my own independent journalism route on patreon.com/Jeff Mosher, patreon.com/Jeff Mosher. You're going to get really in-depth coverage. You're going to get all 22 tape breakdowns, previews for games, recaps, scouting reports, inside information, the whole gamut. It'll be very comprehensive Eagles coverage for only $1.99 a month. That's like 6 cents a day. For great coverage, you can't beat that. Also, for every 100 subscribers, I'm going to donate $10 to the Wounded Warrior Project. Listen, there's no pop-up ads, there's no distractions, and the content you don't even have to look for. It comes straight to you via email. Patreon.com/Jeff Mosher. Check it out.
You're listening to the Go Birds Pod, a Radio.com podcast about your beloved birds.
The Philadelphia Eagles are back on the field Sunday versus the Carolina Panthers, but are they back to being Super Bowl contenders? Folks, the Eagles are back to 500. They are 3-3 after beating the Giants. It seems like forever ago, but it was last Thursday night, 34-13, and we will discuss whether or not the Eagles are really back to what they were last year. Welcome to Inside the Birds. I'm Jeff Mosher, alongside my friend, my good buddy, Adam Kaplan, NFL insider, Eagles insider. You have graduated to friend level, yes. Now, Bill, you're not there yet, but you are a Wildwood legend. You are a former Pitt Panther and, of course, a former Philadelphia Eagle. Welcome back to our show.
Pleasure.
Nice to have you.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Everybody
sorry
good?
Sorry for the absence, yes.
Yeah, no problem. We welcome everybody watching on Facebook Live, Go Birds Podcast. We're proud sponsors, or I'm sorry, proud partners of the Go Birds Network, and we broadcast here from WIP. We'll also be here on Saturday from right. the WIP studios where we do our 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock show. Before we get started, if anybody wants to ask a question via Twitter or Facebook Live, please do, because we will answer all of, well, many of them, the good ones. Adam will be the judge of that.
JP
for our
ask
the insider segment. All right, let's get to it, guys. The Eagles are now 3-3. They beat the crap out of the Giants. Bill, give me your takeaway from that game.
It's more, I think that was a reflection of the Giants being a bad football team. I'm not sold yet on the
Eagles.
Aren't you a
Debbie Downer?
And keep in mind, this is not usually it's not my style. I'm usually a positive guy, but
we want the truth,
though.
We want the truth.
Here's how I feel. Yeah. The Eagles, I'm not sold yet, and I think they're going to struggle until they change a few things.
Like? Adam, are the Birds back, or are there still too many question marks?
Hang on. What do they need to change?
I thought that was interesting. I think that the offense needs to maybe take a little bit of a lesson from the defensive coordinator. And I think that the defensive coordinator did some things in the last couple games that, you know, I think played into their strengths and kind of gave the offense a little bit of a problem. I think the Eagles play calling still is going to hurt their offensive line and ultimately possibly get their offensive quarterback on the sidelines.
Taking a lot of hits.
We have this thing here. Okay. It's on a script, Adam, where we get into some of the, where we make our opening statements.
I like that. I like that.
And then we get into it.
I got you.
So I was going to let Bill expand on that in our next segment.
My bad.
Until you rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
But I liked it. I thought it was good. That was. I haven't seen Bill that fired up, so it was pretty good.
I'll withdraw the flag. The flag's no longer on the play.
Hey, when we get Bill fired up, we got to, you know, we got to, we got
to
push that.
We have to poke the bear.
Yep.
Right.
No, but I'm asking you, are the Eagles back or
no? But the reason why, and Jeff said is we'll get into it later in the show, the reason is different from what Bill's talk about. I just think that you can't think a team is back after one game. It's not as much as against the Giants. It's just that they had not played at an acceptable level before that. Just because they play their best game of the season doesn't mean that they're all the way back. You need to see 2 to 3 games, probably three, and we'll get into the Carolina game in a minute, but I just think that they showed me last week that when they prepare the right way and they don't turn the ball over, which they didn't, they don't have a lot of penalties, which they didn't, they're probably going to be a pretty good football team. But they've got to do it week after week after week. Bill knows as a former player, you have to be consistent. This team has been anything but consistent until that Giant game, Jeff. So where do you stand on this thing?
Well, I will say this. I don't know if the Eagles are back to the point where, like last year, you just say, they're going to win. They're going to win. But I do know this. Carson Wentz is back.
Oh, hell yeah.
He looked good when he came back against the Colts. He looked good in the week or two after. But the way he has looked the last 2 weeks against the Vikings, and then even in a loss, especially in the second half, and then a comeback, and the way he played against the Giants, where he didn't just have it easy. He made a ton of tough throws, including that first touchdown to Alshon Jeffrey. I am more convinced now that maybe the Eagles aren't what they were last year, but they got a chance to get there pretty quickly if Carson Wentz continues to play like that. First time in his career, not that it's been a long one, that he's had back-to-back games of passer ratings over 115. This kid continues to get better. He makes impressive throws. He's becoming a leader. And I honestly think if you get that kind of a Carson most days, you're going to get a good chance to win.
All right, two things, okay, that I want to add here. So you're saying Carson's back. I agree. He was amazing. And typically, you don't want to make that throw when you roll out and then throw it back the other way.
Yeah, it's the yes.
Like Mike Rose said, right? That's very funny. Well, you don't throw across your body like that, but it was a power throw, and the accuracy on it was amazing. You just typically don't see that. But you know, we had Joe Banner on our Inside the Birds radio show last Saturday. You know, Joe told me 2 years ago we were working at ESPN together. I was just feeling him out with the Eagles roster. He was way more bullish than the Eagles roster was in 16 than I was, and I turned out to be right. He just thought that they should have been better than they were. He thought Howie and their front office did a really good job. And he said one thing that blew me away, and we didn't get a chance to talk about this, but he did tell me that he thought that Carson Wentz could be a Hall of Famer someday. And I said to him, I go, Joe, this is probably midway through. I said, we're seeing some good stuff for a rookie quarterback. Like, where are you getting this? And he goes, size, arm strength, athleticism, intelligence, leadership. He's got everything. He said he didn't really have a weakness. The one weakness, and you just talked about, is accuracy. Well, guess what? 68%. Completion rate so far, which is way higher than he's ever been. Mm-hmm. Now, it's only a 4-game sample,
right,
but this is a really good sign. And one more thing, and he gets this from Doug, and one of the coaches told me this previously, the fearlessness that he has. The reason why he holds on the ball a little bit longer than you'd like, he wants to make the play. He's not going to check down. He's not a check down quarterback. He's a throw it downfield. He throws with anticipation. This is a special player. And coaching has helped, certainly. I know we were getting on the coaches a little bit previously. Yeah. It's not a coaching issue. It's just a matter of, I think you outlined it pretty well. The more he plays, the better he's going to be. And I thought you set it up very well. He's back.
Yeah, he's back. You know, when he came out of college, Bill, and I watched him play and I kind of talked to people about what his skill set is. The guy who I felt that people were saying he reminds them of without them actually saying it was Ben Roethlisberger, because he's a tall guy, but he's also mobile, but he's not necessarily, you know, Russell Wilson speed. He just uses his mobility and his strong arm and the way he keeps his eyes upfield the way Ben does. But the more I watch him, and Ben's a great quarterback, but I almost see like a hybrid, I guess, between Ben and, I'm going to take it a step further, and Aaron Rodgers, because of that kind of, I think he's actually more, he makes more plays happen with his ability to get out of the pocket than even Ben does.
Yeah, he extends the play. He's dangerous when he's outside of this pocket as well as he's in. You know, a lot of times teams will say, keep him in the pocket, or they'll say, flush him out of the pocket. With him, you can have you take your pill, take the pill, take your poison, because when he's outside the pocket, he's dangerous, and he was inside the pocket, he's dangerous.
Bill, I want to add something to what you just said. So a couple years ago, you might have been there at an OTA practice. This was his first year. He was okay throwing the ball on the run. Last year, 17 OTAs before the season started, I was blown away. I could not believe how well he threw on the run. I don't know what they did with him last year to get him to be able to throw that way. But the jump that he made, and quarterbacks, look, if they get flushed out, there are a few quarterbacks other than Rodgers. Rodgers, if you saw the Monday night game, he's thrown on one leg with his MCL sprain. There are a few quarterbacks that could do what Wentz does right now. This guy, I mean, it's amazing. The guy's coming off an extremely significant injury. Other than the knee brace, you cannot tell right now, okay, right now, that he had ACL reconstruction. It's just amazing.
He's played 34 career games, something like that. It's unbelievable.
It's unbelievable.
See, it feels like he's been here forever, but it's amazing how fast he's come along.
Was Sam Bradford here before?
My friends, is why I'm concerned.
Okay.
That's why I'm concerned. Because up to the last game, they were playing okay on special teams. They were up and down on defense. Last week, I think they played pretty darn good on defense. They took away a lot of shots down the field, made them completely done. Now, of course, we had a little guy on the other team run for 100 and catch 100, and that's a little bit of a problem. But between the 20s, that was one thing. Once they got in the red zone, they were really buttoned up. They didn't give up any big gashing plays as far as the passing game, besides the one that they had. And Saquon was a little screen pass. They just made a bunch of tackles, guys miss. But and their special teams played good. But their offense, to me, is the play callers are just relying so much on Carson, so much on the pass, so much on things that he gets hit so often, and they don't do things really to help out the offensive line. That's my concern. My concern is he's going to get banged up. And then when you count on a guy so much, all of a sudden that's a big hole ripped out of your team. But if he can stay in there and he can play like that, then they got a shot each week. I'm just concerned about the play call and him getting too many hits.
I feel like I'm in the middle with what Bill has said for the last few weeks and what the Eagles do. I don't think, and I'm not suggesting Bill is saying this, I'm going to try to marry the two concepts here. I don't think they pass too much. I think when they lose, it seems that way. I think they pass a little bit too much out with just five-man protections. I've been paying more attention to this than ever.
Same philosophy as Andy Reid, Jeff.
It is. It is, but so the Patriots, right, they have a fullback still. They go to tight end a lot, and they run from under center a lot.
They do a lot of shotgun, though.
The Packers the other night, can't tell you how many times they were out there with multiple tight ends, and Aaron will be under center. It seems to me, and I don't have the results in front of me, and I'll try to look this up, I would be willing to bet, that no team passes more out of only five-man protections than the Eagles. Do you think that's right?
Yeah, I think it sounds fair.
And with beat-up offensive tackles, I kind of see Bill's point lack of protection.
I hear you.
Here's the thing. So I'm going to make two things. Number one, the stat 0 for 15. Does that ring a bell to anybody? The Giants going into halftime were 0 for 15 on third down.
I hear that's not good.
In the first half?
That's not good. No, in the game before and that game. The previous 12 quarters, they were 0 for 15 on third down.
In the first half?
First half.
Okay.
I'm saying, when I looked at the Eagles first half, second half, the Giants quit, in my opinion. The Giants quit. So I just looked at the first half. The offense, first touchdown was off a short field, 7 points off of an interception, right?
Right.
Second one, off of a long punt return, short field. Third one, third and three, busted coverage. Wide receiver got loose, big play.
Mm-hmm.
So they, in essence, had a five-play drive, touchdown. Fourth possession, off of another punt return, short field. I'm sorry, fourth scoring play, field goal. Every other time they had to start at the 20, they had a punt.
The Eagles you're talking about, right?
Right. So it's like a pitcher in the seventh inning with a 5-run lead. It's very easy to throw a game when you're up 5 runs. When you're in the eighth inning, it's a 1-run game. It's totally different. It's the same thing as a play caller. When you're inside the 10 or inside the 20 or a long field, it's a much different game to call. When you're on the plus side or in the 50 short field, much easier game to call. And all I'm saying is, what they're doing with the long field doesn't, to me, sustain success, and it's taken a lot of hits and a lot of toll on Carson and on the offensive line. That's what I'm saying.
That's interesting. And obviously,
this is called inside the birds. We're getting inside.
So, by the way, that would explain why Bill doesn't think that the Giants are really that good, because you gave the numbers, how bad they are in third down, and it sounds like you don't think the Eagles were challenged all that much.
I don't think they were. Now, I think that they did a good job defensively. I think they did a real nice job defensively down the field, taking away the big play. They basically said, you're not going to beat us deep. We're not going to be beat by Manning. We're not going to get beat by the wide receivers. Run the ball all you want. I don't care. Run it. And inside the 20s, we're going to tighten up. And that's what they did. They came
bend
up.
Bend it, don't break.
Yeah. They bend it, don't break. Right. They played really well.
Your credibility is just lost with me because I told everybody before this podcast started to turn their phones off, and yours just rang.
Is that mine?
Yeah. Yeah. I call people out on this podcast.
I love it. I love
all right?
It.
Except for myself, yeah. Because I don't have to, right?
Well, that's part of the got that fresh cut.
Being a quarterback.
He's going to keep you in line, though.
To Bill's point, though, I this was part of the wonderful symbiosis between the offense and the defense last year, is that the defense created so many turnovers last year that the offense really did work with a lot of favorable field positions. And even when they had to go a long distance, they were able to do it knowing that their defense was going to come on the field. It's weird because the defense right now, it's been a top 10 defense. It's still lacking that turnover create. You saw a little bit of it. You know, it's starting to come alive here. Second half against the Vikings, they got that lateral. And then obviously
first series of the game
last
week.
First series against the Giants. Okay. It's starting to come around, but I feel like it's got to come around a little bit more.
You know what's interesting? You brought up on our show here maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago that the Eagles are still getting a lot of hits on the quarterback, but they're not finishing. That's the issue. They're just a hair off. They're not quite getting there. So maybe this last game was the start of it. And the big thing is the Eagles did not turn the ball over for the first time in a game, I think, this season. So
That
is a big thing. And you know what's interesting is because on a short week, Doug Peterson was asked that in his press conference. And, you know, how much could you really correct? Well, whatever they did has helped. And sometimes it's mind over matter. Just carry out your assignment well. And the mental errors with this football team this season, that's been the big issue. So I think they righted that. I think they're on their way to becoming better. Mm-hmm. But when we set the show up, they're not there yet. You need to do this over consecutive weeks. And this challenge here with the Panthers, they're a much better football team coming off of a tough loss, no question about it. And you saw what happened the week before that. Graham Gano hits that huge field goal.
Sure.
And ironically, the Giants should have beaten them. It's funny how things work out.
Let's tip our hat a little bit to Jim Schwartz because me and Bill, and I feel like you're on this too, that, well, we can say Doug Peterson is a brilliant play caller, but it seems like he's putting his offense in jeopardy with all these five-man protections a lot. I credit Jim Schwartz for going into that game against the Giants and saying, you know what? My base defense is usually one safety high. I've been giving up some big plays this year. I'm going to play two safeties deep a lot more this game than I have before. And that, to me, was the biggest thing. It wasn't just that. It was two safeties, and you saw your cornerbacks up against those giant wide receivers. How many times have you looked and saw the Eagles give up a really quick 6, 7, or 8 yard pass, and the defensive line, which is getting the rush, not being able to hit home because that quarterback's just getting the ball out. That plan against the Giants was to play, protect the corners with two safeties deep and get those cornerbacks up against those wide receivers, which gave the defensive line that split second more, and then they go and get 4 sacks.
Well, you know, my perspective of that is that as a receiver, it's the most frustrating defense to play against because when you get out in the line of scrimmage, you come up and you say, man-to-man covers, and you start salivating. You're like, I love it because all I got to beat is you.
Right.
And then the band get point to the director and say, get ready, the fight's on because we're going to be in the end zone in about 3 plays. Or we're going to be in. But now all of a sudden you say, oh no, they just put cover over top. So now you start thinking you're going to get killed because now you beat the bump coverage and you get off press and you either get the fade route or you get the long route, and now they got to fit it in there, and then the safety's coming off the hash is going to light you up. So now everything becomes different. So what they did, in my opinion, they really frustrated the wide receivers. They chucked them. They rode them down the field, and then they took away the deep threat. So Manning sitting there, looking, he had to check it down. He's completed 70% of his passes, but none of them were the gashes. They're long passes, right? You know, and Adam, we talk about the NFL. These are these explosive plays.
They're not getting them this season. They're not getting with Beckham. Their offense is compressive. By the way, they didn't have Evan Ingram, who their outstanding tight end,
exactly,
who had an MCL sprain. So the Eagles got a break, and he may play this week. In fact, he probably will. But look, bottom line is, good win for them. They're back on a regular schedule this week. I think will help get continuity going. Then the following week, they're in England. And then they have their bye, so they've got two important games here.
Right. So obviously the Panthers game, it takes on equal importance. Want to get over 500, but they're still dealing with a ton of injuries. Adam, let's go through some of the injuries and hear what you know about it. I mean, let's just start with the defensive line or the offensive line. Jernigan, they're talking about maybe coming back soon.
I'm with you.
I'm kind of like, eh. I mean, he's got no conditioning.
He had back surgery. Here's what I know. I talked to someone close to him. They said, look, if he could play by Thanksgiving, great.
Right.
Now, in terms of practice, they'll have, because he has not practiced with the team since last season's Super Bowl, he's going to need he's going to need the full 21 days. He's going to need time, you know, to get back and get in condition. in terms of game condition and practice condition. So that's not the issue. By the way, Destiny Vallejo went on injured reserve today. He did pass through waivers on claim.
He hurt his quad against the Giants.
Is that what it was?
That's
okay,
what
it was quadriceps.
That's what I was
okay.
told, yeah.
Okay. So, and by the way, these fans are saying something to me like, oh, well, they shouldn't have cut him. He had an injury. He's not vested, so he had to be waived.
I also will add to that the team likes what they've gotten so far in Trayvon Hester.
I was going to get to him. He's been an amazing story. Mm-hmm. Former 7th-round pick of the Raiders, and goodness gracious, I don't know why they got rid of him. They could use him.
Because they're the Raiders.
Well, you know, this kid, right now, he's their third tackle.
Yeah.
Third defensive tackle. The guy just got here 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing. And, you know, coaching's important here. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they could get a guy, Bill, that just got here, and he's been a flash player. How does that happen?
One man's junk is another man's treasure. Same thing on the
NFL. But how do you get a guy ready so quickly to be a factor? I mean, in the time that I'm told, and the tape that he has on the field is really good in the limited time. So how does it happen?
My opinion is that there's somebody, and I don't know this, but it's something you and I could check out, but there's somebody in the scouting department, somebody in the coaching department that has played with him, that has got him from high school, that drafted him recruited him in college, that played with him in college, played against him, had him somewhere that they were able to see this, what nobody else could see, and then also know his strengths and be able to fit him in there.
Yeah,
that's my opinion.
Good signing.
Without, at the risk of making this sound like way too easy, Jim Schwartz's scheme is see quarterback, get quarterback, right?
I mean, I know.
He might have played in a one gap scheme before, and they might have seen that.
Well, Paul Gunther's defense in Oakland, okay, where Gunther's new there, but
that's a one gap, isn't it?
Yes, they actually. I'm told they actually run a little wide nine.
Mm-hmm.
No one runs wide nine like Schwartz. Yeah. I mean, they play the most snaps of that, but nevertheless, it's a great addition. So the big one is obviously Jason Peters. We need to start with that. I think you and I have similar information. We heard he was going to play fairly soon.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the thing now, I didn't know he was going to play this week. the person I spoke to mentioned this week. He was limited on Wednesday, but he's going to play. So Jeff, what could you tell us about the information you gathered on bicep injuries?
Yeah, so I spoke to two guys who have had a bicep injury who played for the Eagles recently, Todd Harriman and Brent Celek, and I also spoke to an NFL head trainer. And to get to your point on Peters returning to practice, the lack of information on Peters' injury was really difficult to understand what was going on because the trainer told me that if the tear is in a certain part of the bicep, which is closer to the shoulder and away from the elbow, right? If it's there, you don't even have to miss time. Okay, he said it's not that bad of a deal. You can play through it. And then I happened to speak to Brent Celek, who basically told me, and I don't think anybody ever knew this. He was never on an injury report. He never came out. He never even had surgery to treat it. But he tore his ACL in 2010. And played the. I'm sorry, not ACL. He tore his biceps tendon in 2010, and played the last 7 years of his career. Only missed one game in his whole career was because of concussion. He said he's got a mark that you can see.
Oh God!
He actually said it's kind of a pretty cool looking mark. Of course, that's typical sounds, right?
Oh my God, man.
But he said actually he was having a shoulder pain, severe shoulder pain before the injury, so that when he did tear the bicep tendon, it alleviated the shoulder pain.
Oh, my God.
It actually made it better for him.
Wow.
But then I spoke to Todd Harriman, who tore his bicep tendon. I forget what year it was. 2015, I think.
Yeah.
Second year of chip. I remember.
I reported that.
Now, it was a bad tear. His was near the elbow.
And you remember, you know what he did? He tell you he wanted to play?
He played the next week, but then he sprained his ankle. So he said, quote, F this, I'm coming out.
Well,
so.
but then I think, didn't it give later in the season or something like that?
He had surgery after that.
Yeah.
He didn't play again that season. But so it sounds like with Jason Peters, he suffered the tear at the place where it's the least inconvenient for you to be able to do your job.
Do you hear that? Do you hear prayer? I mean, actually, you know what? You can't really hear praying. But if you were able to like feel people's energy, that is everybody at the NovaCare Center and Carson Wentz initially leading the prayers, saying, "Please, please, Jason, please suit up this weekend."
Because his backup is Big V. Yeah, Big V is not playing well.
No, and Jason is struggling. He's not playing.
That's the other issue.
Well.
Yeah, right.
We are used to him playing, but he's definitely better than Big V, or at least the way Big V's been playing this season.
Okay.
I know he's got some potential, but he hasn't played well.
You know, I've gone back and watched some of the games, and we do judge offensive tackles unfairly in that. And this is not new. It's the old adage, but Jason struggled against Olivier Vernon on that first drive against the Giants. He gave up two pressures on the first Giants' first real possession, not the pick, the first, first full possession. And your first thought is say, there he is again. He's playing poorly. But then, you know, from that point on until he left in the third quarter, Carson really wasn't hit too much. So it's been like that every game where you pick two or three plays where Jason got abused that you're not normally used to seeing it.
Or a penalty.
But then you forget about the 45 other snaps where he really dominated.
That's true.
You take it for granted.
But it goes to show you both. One, that he's still a pretty good player. But two, he is getting beat at times or playing poorly in a way that we haven't seen. And I think that we finally really are starting to see the end of Jason. I'd be shocked if he was a starting left tackle for this team next year.
Yeah, I totally agree.
For me, and the thing is, you're not used to Jason Peters getting bull rushed.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to get beat, he's going to get beat off a twist or a
spot. Wow, he got bull rushed, huh?
But he got bull rushed.
Really?
Yeah.
And maybe that had to do with his bicep, because when you're pressing outside, and you're trying to win inside, maybe when he did that, he just didn't have the strength. But when he got back on his heels and he got bull rushed into the quarterback, that shocked me, because nobody bull rushes Jason Peters.
That's correct.
Maybe Strahan back in his.
So Jeff, and you were just talking about Peters. You know, he won't be back next year. I don't see it. I'm not reporting this. This is an opinion.
Right.
The reason is very simple. He's not the same player. You can't keep paying high cap numbers. They're going to want to get Wentz's deal done after the season. They can. They'll be able to do it after the Eagles are done playing. So I can't see it. But here's a good thing for the Eagles. They've got. I looked it up before the show. They've got 8 draft picks, absolutely for sure. They've got 7 plus 1. They've Baltimore's. The 7th round pick has got to be resolved. There's some there are a bunch of trades that happen with it. But the fact of the matter is they have 7 plus 1 plus whatever compensatories they get. They could have as many as 10 or 11 picks.
Yeah.
And this is not the show we're going to do. We'll talk about this in December. But the bottom line is they've got a lot of players that they've got to replace. We talked about Roddy McLeod and the older players. So it's good. And we've got the trade deadline coming up in 2 weeks. They're going to be very judicious, as it was explained to me, with these draft picks, because they know they have a lot of work to do.
And that's good. And that's kind of the formula that the teams like the Packers and the Ravens use. You know, they use those. They find starters out of those guys. Mm-hmm. Real quick, the secondary we haven't talked about, but they're as beat up as any other part. And now you've got Sidney Jones out for quite a while.
Yeah.
So it looks like you've got Avante Maddox playing safety, where he's never played before. Bill, I'll get you on that in a second. He's probably going to have to move back to nickelback without Sidney Jones there. And that means Rasul Douglas, who never really, really, truly played safety in college.
He says he did.
He probably practiced at it. But
he said it on Twitter, actually.
Listen,
he responded
to someone else. I trust John Barchard, the producer of this podcast, and he says he looked it up and saw no snaps from safety for this kid in college.
Anyway.
So whatever.
Yeah.
But, and plus, they play a funky defense too, West Virginia, don't they? What's the name of their defense? Don't they have a name? No, you play. You've seen there. What's their cover?
Virginia Tech or West Virginia?
No, West Virginia. Don't play a funky style defense.
I know Virginia Tech plays a cover.
Maybe I'm
9.
Getting confused with Virginia Tech. Yeah. But either way,
I think they still stick with a 4-2-5.
The 4-2-5.
Okay. That is funky.
All right,
that,
a little funky. Not as crazy as I thought. But so where do they? This is really. I don't want to call it catastrophic, but this is certainly not a picture that they saw going into the year. Two guys playing out of place.
Yeah, well, just one thing, you know, and this is just my opinion, or you say perspective, is that when you're playing cover two a lot more than cover man with a free high, and a lot of times when you're in man, you play press and you flip and you run.
Right.
So that means you're not totally involved in the run game. When you play cover two, you're expected to be in the run game. So little guys don't like hitting, and they don't like getting hit. And when you practice that and get hit, and a lot of times they don't get hit, but you're still involved in the running game, a lot of that could just be attrition because they're not used to being up on the line of scrimmage and taking on these fullbacks, taking on these counters, taking on these running backs, because a lot of times they've been flipping and running, and that's been left to the linebacker scraping or the wide nine. But in this cover two, you're expected to play run support, and a lot of times that brings corners up.
So, you know, you just talked about the wide nine. The reason why it didn't work under Washburn is because they didn't tackle. They were awful tackling. Here, Schwartz's guys tackle, because the wide nine will not work unless the DBs. This is the way to explain to me.
Yep.
The DBs have to tackle, and they're.
But to his point now, when you have Rasul Douglas playing one of the two safety spots, don't you per se have to be now? You can't have Rasul Douglas coming into the box to be a box safety. So you either have to be a cover two team that is a little bit softer there as far as tackling, or you have to bring Malcolm as your only box safety and be predictable in that manner.
Well, and that's a good point, because here's the thing: when you're playing cover two, your safeties are in the hash.
Yeah.
They're up top. And if they're in run support, they're flying up there, but they're not the first guys usually unless they get into the second level.
Right.
When you're in cover one, you're in cover three, then the strong safety's down, And Malcolm's in very much involved in the run game because
he's in box so much. So, I mean, you could see him line up. So injury-wise, yep. As Jeff said, City Jones, he's not playing this week. He might be out a while. Corey Graham's not expected to play. So that's why they're really thin at safety. And by the way, they did work out a couple safeties this week.
Right.
Quentin Rollins, who was drafted by the Packers in the second round as a corner, they actually moved him to safety. Last year, the Eagles worked him out as a safety. And they also worked out a Philly native,
Ibrahim Campbell.
Ibrahim Campbell, yeah. A former fourth rounder, who went to, did he go to Chestnut Hill?
Yeah, he was from Chestnut
Hill Academy, who went to, did he go to, no, he went to Northwestern.
Northwestern. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Same conference,
right.
though.
Yeah.
He's a former fourth rounder.
Purple.
Rollins would be more of a free safety. He's not a box player.
Right.
Underachiever. Should have been way better because he was drafted high. Just never worked.
Yeah.
He was wave injured, and then they reached injury settlement. So he worked out. You know, as I've been saying on this podcast, it's hard to find safeties.
Yeah.
And they finally worked a couple guys out.
And by the way, I have a good feeling Haloti Ngata will be able to play. I know he's only practicing limited, but I've got the sense that he's going to be able to play on Sunday.
Yeah, good, because Doug didn't want to get out there. He's like, I'm not going to get – well, yeah, guy, look, you got – I mean –
big, huge secret.
So
you have no defensive tackles. Huge secret.
A couple things. Carson Wentz was added to the injury report with a back he's playing. That's not going to be a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Darren Sproles. Okay, the mystery in Darren Sproles. I'm told he's got a fairly significant hamstring strain, somewhere around a grade 2. That's typically a 4 to 6 week recovery. So that would put him in the timeline. He's very close to coming back. He's not going to be this week. I don't know what their plan is because they're going away. You know, they're going overseas. So I don't know what that entails, whether they would bring him back to practice fully next week. But he's close.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, Lane Johnson. Okay, so this is really interesting. So we all know he has a high ankle sprain.
Yes.
Talked to someone close to before the game, said, I don't think it's going to happen. He's in pain. You know how tough he is, tough-minded. I don't know how he did it. I don't know. This guy is so tough. We all know Lane. He's incredible. He cares so much about character and resiliency, and he wants to be there for his teammates.
Mm-hmm.
Based on what he had to deal with, played fairly well.
You know, it's funny.
I don't know how he did it.
It's funny. We were talking about Doug and protecting his guys, right? I'm going through the tape today, again, watching the running game, and I could count not too many plays, but three or four where they run a zone with either Lane, and they may be one of the few teams that does this, which is pull your tackles mm-hmm. up the middle, right?
On
where
they, uncovered,
both
yep.
Lane and Jay Peter. I'm like, yep. He's taking his two most beat up linemen and just running them as the lead block.
I love it too, because when you're uncovered, they're like, you know what? Instead of going up the second level, let's lead them up there, like, because they don't have a fullback.
Right.
So,
that's right.
Know,
that's right.
The fullback.
That's right.
All right.
So
normally,
that's it.
We would also talk about in this segment, because it's on everybody's mind, who are the Eagles going to get? They just did cap space with Fletcher Cox. I think, you know, we've addressed a lot of this.
$10.3 million under the cap, by the way.
All the names are the names. Yeah. And I think, Adam, you said it best, that we're still, what, two weeks away?
Just about 2 weeks,
so
yeah.
So there's not going to be a whole lot right now to talk about.
No. Enough of the Bell stuff. I mean, we dealt with it like 3 weeks ago. It's not happening. It never was going to happen. After the deadline's over, I mean, we'll talk about it. But
right.
Shady McCoy, we'll talk more about next week. I talked to two teams today. They think the Bills won too much. The Bills are this. They're not out of the playoffs. Yes, they're starting Derek Anderson. They're just. They would like to keep McCoy, is my sense.
Right.
Is he available? Absolutely. But I just don't think that they're to the point now they want to unload him. Like the Raiders want to load half the roster. Like the Raiders want, they're going to flip that. If the Raiders could trade five players in 2 weeks, they'll trade five players.
Yeah.
If they could find teams that want them.
Only good ones, though.
That's the problem. They don't have a lot of trade value.
Right.
McCoy absolutely has trade value, but I think the Bills have to get realistic in what they're asking for. So nothing really, the urgency is Andrew Brand. I love that line is, what's the line he has about?
Deadlines.
Spur action. Spur action.
Deadline spur action.
Unless they have something.
Yeah.
It was some years of the trade deadline, there's nothing. This is not like the NBA trade deadline.
It's not like
it was
baseball,
crazy.
It's not like the NBA.
But
yeah.
Every once in a while, there are like five or six trades that go down. And these younger general managers, kind of the word around the league is that they're way more aggressive. Guys in their 30s, early to mid-40s, they're a little bit more broad thinking. And they're more willing to do stuff. Like last year when the Eagles, and we'll talk more about this next week, but the Eagles were not looking for Jay Ajayi. The Dolphins found the Eagles. And
right.
they called every team. Adam Gase wanted him off the roster. And you know what? They had leverage, and they only kept a fourth-round pick. What a great trade.
Yeah. Moving forward with the Panthers, I want to go to the All-22 segment because this segues perfectly because obviously they're beat up in the secondary. They played a lot of cover two, more cover two than normal against the Giants. Bill, what did you see on tape specifically? Go through a sequence that you saw. You wanted to talk about a sequence that you saw against the Giants that worked really well, and then we'll see if that can translate against the Panthers as well.
Well, I give, you know, we all think very highly of Coach Schwartz, and watching the defense, I have a whole, even another level of appreciation for him, because sometimes guys are very stubborn.
I like yes. The way sometimes Jim Schwartz is very stubborn.
This is true, too.
Giving up too much space, yes.
Right, exactly. And I just think that he's done some things over the last couple games that just, you can just see he's a genius in some aspects. And he puts his players in the right spots, and he's not trying to stick a square peg into a round hole. He's evolving. He's evolving during the season, even sometimes at halftime, which I love to see coaches make adjustments, especially at halftime. And usually the good ones do that, or aren't afraid to do it either. They trust their players. And what I saw him do this week is say, you know what? These guys have some good receivers. Our guys are a little banged up. Let's not put them on the island as much. Let's not let Manning beat us. So what he did, he went out there and he tried to disguise it a lot. And if you look at the plays that we saw, and it was starting with in the second quarter with about 11 or 12 minutes ago, it was first and 10. They throw a pass out to their I guess you could say they're malcontent out there on the left side, Beckham. And the Eagles are showing cover two, but then they come up and they go bump. They come up and they make a great tackle at the line of scrimmage. Really disguised. It's second now and long. They try and do another pass. Now they go trips or slot to the right side of the field. They try the same thing on the line of scrimmage. Eagles come up. They're in cover two. They can make a great tackle at the line of scrimmage. Now it's third and 16.
So wait, they just did the same exact formation but on the other side of the field?
But they went for first time it was trips, and then the other time it was slot.
Oh, okay.
So the Eagles had to come out and look like it was cover. They almost disguised it, make it look like it was cover three, which is three deep. And right. It really was cover two. But they did such a great job with Malcolm Jenkins. He's the one who really showed everything and disguised it. Then on third down, it's third and 16. So what do? They say, you know what? We're not going to bump. We're not going to do it. They took their safeties and their corner, and they played them 15 yards deep and said, you're not getting behind us.
Yeah.
And what they did is they had to dump it, and they said, okay. They come up, and they made a tackle. They ran a little screen pass to the running back.
I guess they didn't watch tape of the Titans being able to convert against a third and 15.
Fourth and 16.
Fourth and 16 the same way, because you're right. They just dumped it.
Yeah,
dumped it. They should have thrown it at the sticks. Exactly. All right, good stuff.
So
thanks,
good
Bill.
Good job by the defense.
Definitely. All right, we're going to go to our Ask an Insider segment here. So we'll take a few questions before we finish up tonight from our Facebook Live audience or Twitter audience. I believe John Barchard is going to be
the moderator. The moment that Adam Kaplan mentions one of my 2015 draft crushes is, even though he's terrible and he played poorly with the Packers, I still got excited. So thank you for that.
You're a big Quinn Rollins.
Oh, my God. I loved him coming out.
Why did he like him, though? I wonder why.
Because he was such a freak athlete that you can mold into anything.
His highlight tape was really impressive.
I thought he was going to be a secret.
Drafted athlete, not a football player.
It's very true. Ryan Shepard wants to
maybe
know.
Maybe he will be a footballer, but.
Could you see the Eagles making a move despite freeing the cap space? And if you do see him making an impact trade, what would it be at this point?
It's a good question, Adam, because some people have assumed that maybe
not
the cap space, if no one's available, that they use the cap space, though, for an extension now.
Who could they? They can't do Carson until after the season's over.
No, they could do Hicks.
Yeah.
They're not going to do Ajayi, obviously. Sure. They could do Nelson Agholor. And they could do
Ronald
Darby.
Sure, you know, the word in the league is that you need at least $7 to $10 million just to operate, because you want to potentially extend. You want to sign street free agents.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to operate when they only had $4 million under cap. It's
but
just
now
hard.
Eight, right?
Yeah, they're actually over 10. 10,
over 10.
10 according to NFLPA records, about 10.3
So if they get nobody, could you see them giving Darby or Hicks an extension?
They might, sure. Sure.
They
love Hicks. I mean, and Nelson's yard per catch average is really dropped for whatever reason.
Well, almost by 3 yards. Probably inflated a little bit after the 3 for 95.
Yeah, it's funny. Doug brought that up about the scramble. I could see that. But the number one, as we speak here, the number one issue now is explosiveness on offense. They barely need, I'm not backing off this, and Mike Wallace could have done this, and you could say all you want about Mike Wallace and how inconsistent he is, and he would have caught a lot of passes. They have no one who can get deep. They have no natural separators. And the fact is, when you're using Jordan Matthews on the outside, does that tell you everything? He's an inside player.
It definitely tells you everything. Next question.
Casey Young actually wants to know, why don't the Eagles trust DeAndre Hall at safety yet?
I don't know, Bill,
that's good for you, because they've had this guy on the roster for weeks. He's a safety with a cornerback pedigree. So why are they playing Rasul Douglas there when they brought in a guy who's played safety? And they've had him since the waiver, you know, the cutdown deadline, basically.
The only thing I can think of is that maybe he's not picking up the defense mentally.
Exactly.
You know, that's
because he'd be in then.
Yeah, he'd be in, right? Because physically and experience-wise, he seems to be perfect fit, but just mentally, it seems like
So, Bill, you know, as a player, If you don't do it in practice, you don't get in. So that's why, by the way, I'm told on Shelton Gibson, that's why he's not playing a lot. It's carrying out his assignment the way he's taught it.
Yeah, he's a terrible route runner.
He's just not. It's just not getting done.
Yeah.
Because boy, quite frankly,
he's what they need.
If he carried over 50% of what he did in the preseason, they're not doing anything at receiver. They just don't have anyone who could get deep. You know, running back again. Will as more information develops, their opinion on what they need might be different than others.
Right.
You know, but I think everyone associated with it knows that if they don't get anyone who can get downfield, it makes it so much easier to cover.
Sure.
And if you look at the yards per pass attempt, what Carson's getting done is pretty good. It's way better than Foles, but it's not where it needs to be. So to sum it up right now, they need a playmaker in the worst way.
What else?
And then last one from our good friend Keith Willow, always joins us pretty much every time you guys
we go. Like
what's up,
that.
Keith?
Do you think Peters finishes the season?
Oh, man, that's kind of like a, does he or don't.
It's funny that he just said that. All I was going to say is in my notes at the end, I was going to say that my prediction is Peters won't finish the game. But now it doesn't mean he won't
come
back.
Or the season?
No, this was just the game. Our prediction for his scores.
Yeah.
That's one of my things. I don't think Peters is going to finish the game. But as far as the season, he's going to have a break of rest. It'll be tough. Hopefully he doesn't. He can finish it with the bicep. Hopefully there's nothing lower body.
Right. I tell you, if I were a betting man and the odds were, you know, like something like 70-30 that he'll finish, I wouldn't bet the 70 that he finishes.
I would agree.
I would also take that bet.
I would add that they took the quadriceps off the injury report, so that's a good thing.
That is a good thing.
So we'll see if he could last. But man, the quad was bothering him. It clearly impacted his play. Now it's got the biceps. And
let me ask you though, in light of Brent Celek playing almost his entire career with a torn bicep and never being on the injury report, do you really take the injury report into?
Yeah, but hang on there. When did he injure it? The biceps? Is it in the off season?
Yeah. No.
Was it in season?
No, during the season. Against Houston, Texas.
Wow.
That year.
Wow. Yeah. Huh. Amazing.
All right. That is it for our Ask an Insider segment. So we thank everybody who submitted questions, and of course we'll do that again next Wednesday when we're here at 8:00, and of course we will be on Saturday WIP. So if you didn't get a chance to have your question asked, give us a call. Here at the WIP studio, Saturday, 3:00, we'll be doing the Inside the Birds radio. I'm going to end this thing on a quick, funny story, fuzzy memories.
Yes.
My turn to tell a story?
Sure, please do.
Have I ever told you guys about the time that I texted Howie Roseman about aloe juice?
What?
No.
Aloe juice?
Yeah, so...
Was it correct?
One day, the wife asked me to go to Whole Foods, one of your favorite places, to get some aloe juice. I don't know what aloe juice is at the point. I still don't. Had no idea. And so I couldn't find it in Whole Foods because Whole Foods, for people who don't go to Whole Foods very often, is like a labyrinth. It's like a maze of things that you've never seen in your life. And so I whipped out the phone and I said, where can I find this aloe juice? My wife's name is Rose.
Oh,
unbeknownst to me, I text Howie Roseman
That's
really
so great.
Quickly
That's
instead
so great.
Of my wife. So I get this response back, and it says, "Aloe juice? What are you talking about?" And now I'm mad because I'm thinking she knows.
Oh
what
no,
She's the
God!
One that
you thought of that Howie's your wife? That's no. so great.
But then I quickly, before I sent an angry response, I realized that I sent the text message to Howie Roseman and not my wife. Rose, and it was funny.
That's funny.
I saw Howie the next day, and he actually said, "I thought, Jeff, you were texting me in some kind of code."
Yeah, that's good.
He's like, and I didn't know how to respond to that.
That's so great.
So that's the next.
That's funny.
It was almost as good as the time I accidentally texted Todd Bowles instead of my landscaper Todd about doing weeding.
Oh, jeez.
So, that one was pretty funny
anyway,
as well. Yes.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. What did he say?
Yeah.
You'll have to tune into the next podcast to hear that one.
That'll be the next story.
All right. That's going to be it for Inside the Birds Radio. Billy Osborne, Adam Kaplan, I'm Jeff Mosher. Thanks for everybody for watching and listening, and we'll catch you again next Wednesday, 8:00.